The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Putin is showing up first, Biden second. You thought that was important.
One, I don't think Putin is worthy to be on the stage with President Biden. I really don't.
The simple contrast between Geneva and Helsinki will be something of an accomplishment for this new president.
A certain shift in Russian tone as far as President Biden is concerned in recent weeks. But now they're suggesting, well, maybe he is more effective.
I think there's a grudging respect for President Biden behind the scenes. He has decades of experience.
Well, you definitely will avoid this kind of kowtowing to Putin that you saw under Trump, which was unprecedented for an American president. So that's a win right there. But clearly, Biden will go in there and he will draw some red lines with Putin. He will lay down the law to Putin in a way that Trump certainly never did. And I think in a way, this is sort of, it's certainly not Putin winning in the way that he did with Trump, but he is winning in some sense because we and everybody in the media, we're all treating this like this is Reagan Gorbachev 85.
But we did see a handshake, a pretty significant handshake.
These moments are about moments. And I'll tell you one moment I noticed there in the Biden-Putin interaction. The handshake, Biden looked Putin in the eye with a smile, Putin looked away. Again, you don't want to read too much or too little, but again, these are about public posturing. It's about how you project strength.
We don't have, Trump being, in effect, a spokesperson for Putin any longer. We have a president who will stand up and defend American interests.
What are some of the facets of Joe Biden's life, his personality, his experience, that might actually lend a hand to getting some sort of success or deliverable out of this meeting?
Well, Mika, you're absolutely right. We've lost 4 years. And the fact that President Biden will come very well prepared, he has a very strong team around him. Watching the disaster of the Trump presidency in basically giving a green light to Putin to do whatever he wanted once he helped elect Trump, of course, I think you'll see a much different approach. Now, and sadly, what we've seen over the last 4 years, and particularly since our election in 2020, is that we have people within our own country who are doing Putin's work.
Well, there's 2 minutes there that we've spent wasting away
Putin
time.
Showing we'll never, up first,
we'll never be able to get back. So I offer my heartfelt apologies. If it makes you feel any better, I had to sit through it as well. Twice, actually. Saw the preview and then saw it there at the top of the show. But there's your friends in the propaganda media telling you before the meeting even happens how successful it is. They know what happened behind closed doors. They know this was like Reagan Gorbachev. They know this represents a tremendous victory for the Biden administration. They know Putin, he has all kinds of respect for Biden. You can't even look at him in the eye, said Jim Sciutto, the Obama sycophant. Cannot even look Biden in the eye as the two of them shook hands. And what about shaking hands? We just were treated to all kinds of images over the weekend, just 2-3 days ago, elbow to elbow, all of the G7 leaders. Where was elbow to elbow this morning? Biden just shook his, he put his hand right out there. I wonder if he figured Putin wouldn't put up with that nonsense, that spectacle. What a fraud so many of our Western leaders are. How transparently fake are they? When in front of the cameras just a few days ago, they're elbow to elbow, safety first. We've got to keep safe distance, COVID-19. And then as soon as he shows up with Putin, it's right up in his face. It's hand. He's got to, because he's got to come across as tough. You can't come across tough by putting your elbow up to someone. I mean, let's just be honest. So as I told you yesterday, the media going in, they've pretended that this is now The toughest U.S. president. This is the second coming of George Washington. Well, not George Washington. He owned slaves. This is the second coming of FDR. This is like JFK all over it. This is Reagan. Because he shook his hand and Putin looked away. We're happy that you joined us today. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm your host, Stephen Fleury, and we're very, very happy that you decided to tune in. We also appreciate our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio. CRN distributes this program live to 11 million homes via cable television, broadcast radio, the internet, Roku, and other platforms and devices. We're right here at the hump day of the week, so that means we're coming up quick on the weekend edition of the Trumpet Daily. We play that on a radio station in Phoenix, Arizona. That's KFNX. Also our radio station here in North Edmond, Oklahoma, KPCG. And we post the weekend edition on our website, thetrumpet.com. Of course, you can go to our website if you're here in the audio stream through CRN. You can go to our website and view the video presentation, the TV version of the Trumpet Daily. That's thetrumpet.com. /live. One other brief announcement. The crew, they got into the vehicles this morning, the Celtic Throne crew, and they are on their way to Birmingham, Alabama, or Birmingham. I've got to get used to saying it the American way. I've been in the UK for 6 years, but in Birmingham, Alabama, that's coming up tomorrow night. And if you're anywhere near the Birmingham area, the Nashville area, that show comes up on Monday. That's in the world famous, I believe it's called the Ryman Auditorium. But if you're anywhere near those two cities, by all means, visit CelticThrone.com and make sure that you come out and see one of those productions. A number of us will be heading out on Sunday to see the show in Nashville on Monday night. So that's very exciting indeed. Well, while the propaganda media hyperventilates over Biden supposedly manhandling Putin, the truth about the big lie of January 6th, it's being exposed. The truth is coming out. The narrative that the media, your friends in the media, you just heard them there, just raving over Biden's handling of Vladimir Putin. Talking about how, well, you heard Hillary there. They brought her back from the dead. She comes out and says, yeah, that Putin actually helped Trump get in there. Were it not for Putin, Trump never would have come along. And here are these people. Here are these people compromised. Compromised by communists in Russia, in China. This man, the fake president, just gave away the pipeline that gives Vladimir Putin control over the West, at least the West that is in Europe. That happened just a few weeks ago. Here they, and they're compromised by CCP money, the whole family, the whole Biden crime family. And there's Hillary Clinton pretending as if it was Donald Trump who was an agent of Russia, continuing on with the hoax that is Trump-Russia collusion. That's another narrative, just completely collapsed. And so here comes January 6th. They need this. They really need this. It's just lie on top of lie on top of lie. You've got to have the Wuhan virus, use it as a pretext, weaponize it so that we can get tens of millions of mail-in ballots. That way we can steal the election. And then when they want to expose the fraud, the obvious fraud from November 3rd, well, let's create another false narrative. Let's create January 6th so that we can hide the fraud, so that we can intimidate them into silence, so that we can persecute our political enemies. That's what's happening. The big lies, we covered that on a recent program, just one big lie after another. Darren Beatty over at Revolver, he came out with his bombshell article, a real bombshell, from the other night. Unindicted co-conspirators in the January 6th case, or cases, raise disturbing questions of federal foreknowledge. This is a lengthy piece at Revolver. It goes on, I think, for 20 or 25 pages. And it basically provides proof that the federal government, that would be Christopher Wray's FBI, that would be the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland. We've heard some clips from him this week, threatening. And he's got another couple we'll play later, threatening white people because they're the greatest danger that America's facing, white supremacy. But here are these agencies, these government agencies, and we've gone through it before, how that they've been thoroughly and completely compromised, weaponized by the fake Biden administration, just like they were under the Obama years. And they were used as weapons by the radical left, the deep state, the swamp, whatever you want to call it, to try to destroy Donald Trump. And they're still continuing to that end. You hear Hillary Clinton on that montage going on and on and on about the same old hoax that was exposed as a hoax many times over. So he comes out with this article, unindicted co-conspirators. Here's proof, basically, that the federal government helped. They actually helped. This is the explosive allegation in this Revolver piece, that your government, if you're an American, your government actually helped to orchestrate the January 6th Capitol siege, the so-called insurrection. How did they help them? Well, with all of these plants, with all of these FBI agents that infiltrated into these right-wing militias, stirring up strife, leading the protest that turned violent to some extent. The only person that died, as we well know, is someone that was shot dead by a police officer. That's an established fact. So Revolver comes out with this bombshell, and then Tucker Carlson, for his part, he picks it up last night and gives, I think, 15 or 20 minutes to it in his opening segment. It's a truth bomb about the lie that is the armed insurrection of January 6th. And Tucker, in his piece, he even tied in some of the things that Vladimir Putin even has said, or questions that he's raised that no one in the Western media seems like they're inclined to answer or even look into. This is clip 10 from Tucker's show last night.
Through the transformation of a formerly democratic republic into something else, we're looking at growing authoritarianism. That's not an overstatement. Vladimir Putin knows authoritarian systems very well, and he sees clearly what is happening in this country. Watch this.
Did you order Alexei Navalny's assassination?
Of course not. We don't have this kind of habit of assassinating anybody. That's one. Number two is, I want to ask you, did you order the assassination of the woman who walked into the Congress and who was shot and killed by a policeman? Do you know that 450 individuals were arrested after entering the Congress, and they didn't go there to steal a laptop? They came with political demands.
Okay, so yeah, we just played tape of Vladimir Putin. Now, under normal circumstances, we would never play tape of a foreign adversary criticizing our government. But honestly, those are fair questions. Who did shoot Ashley Babbitt, and why don't we know? Are anonymous federal agents now allowed to kill unarmed women who protest the regime? That's okay now? No, it's not okay. It'll never be okay. And why are all those January 6th protesters still in prison on trespassing charges, as so many Biden voters who torched federal buildings walking free? What's the answer to that question? If all of that was going on in Russia, we would rightly call it scary. We would call Putin a dictator. In fact, we do call him a dictator.
It's a good point. If all of this was going on in Russia, what would we say? There's the pious, very self-righteous reporter asking Vladimir Putin, did you order this assassination? And notice how these Gentile leaders, we saw it with China in the Alaska summit, they're just using what the propaganda media spew out and turning it on them, or what they don't spew out in the case of Ashley Babbitt. In China, they said, human rights abuses? Look at your own nation. You go on and on about systemic racism. Why don't you deal with your own racism, says the Chinese officials. And then here comes Vladimir Putin. They ask him about assassinations. And he says, what about Ashley Babbitt? She was killed. She was an unarmed woman, a veteran of all things, walking through the Capitol, and we now know Senator Ron Johnson, he's actually gone through some of the 14,000 hours of footage, and he's seen law enforcement officials open the door and then just bring the protesters right on through. He's counted at least 386, I think it was. That's right, the police opening the Capitol doors and ushering them in, these armed insurrectionists. So what are we to make of this? And why was Ashley Babbitt gunned down when she's not even carrying a weapon? Why is it when she's passing by two other law enforcement officials, why didn't they apprehend her? Why didn't they arrest her on the spot? And what about all these co-conspirators? What about all of these individuals mentioned in so many of these cases? Putin mentioned 450 or so that have been put into jail. All of these cases, you know, there's a paper trail. The investigations point out this individual did this, this, and this. But what Beatty brings out at his revolver piece is that there's others mentioned in these articles, or rather others mentioned in these indictments, that haven't been prosecuted, that haven't been indicted. And these were people that were committing crimes, trespassing, disorderly conduct, and so on. So he's just connecting the dots. And in the revolver piece, he draws parallels between the plot in Michigan several months ago, I guess this was back last year, to kidnap Governor Whitmer. And as Beatty brings out in his piece, there were FBI agents that infiltrated the three percenters. They're like up there with the Proud Boys, seen as a very dangerous militia. To take Merrick Garland's words, I mean, it's the greatest threat, and Biden too. This is the greatest threat facing the United States. These right-wing militia groups or extremist groups. So FBI infiltrated the three percenters, and I think there were something like four or five FBI agents in on that plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer. And of course, this is how the FBI was able to stop it, because they were part of the planning. How many of these FBI agents were egging on these militiamen? Say, hey, let's go ahead and go after Whitmer. Beatty brings out in his piece that they were also planning to storm the Capitol in Michigan. And so he implies that this could have been a trial run for what happened on January the 6th. We know about, we've heard reports about Antifa and BLM that they infiltrated the protesters on January 6th. Beatty's explosive allegation is that the FBI did too. They have agents working undercover. These are the ones, they're right there in the middle of the melee, but these are the ones that aren't indicted because, well, they're helping the FBI. So it's fine for them, I suppose, to stir up anger and division and strife and even violence. But then in the end, the only ones that get prosecuted are the ones that either were vandalizing things or, in a lot of cases, just simply trespassing through the halls of Congress. This is from Beatty's article. He says, indeed, the curious lack of indictments filed against the entire gamut of persons referenced as playing leadership roles within the Oath Keepers. So you have the Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, and the Proud Boys. And some of these ones that played leadership roles, incredibly, have maybe not been prosecuted or indicted. It says here, this includes Person 2, Person 3, Person 10, Person 14, Person 15, Person 16, Person 19, 20, along with many co-conspirators listed only as an individual. So what is going on here? You might remember, this is, I think, a couple months ago, I forget the exact date, but they had the lead prosecutor on 60 Minutes, and he was there bragging about the hundreds of people that that they had arrested following January the 6th. And at one point he says, you know, from January 6th to January 20, we were working overtime to try to put as many people in jail as possible so that there wouldn't be any kind of interruption at the fake inauguration on January the 20th. This lead prosecutor, his name is Michael Sherwin, and he was on 60 Minutes with Scott Pelley just a couple months ago, clip 12.
After the 6th, we had an inauguration on the 20th. So I wanted to ensure, and our office wanted to ensure, that there was shock and awe, that we could charge as many people as possible before the 20th. And it worked because we saw through media posts that people were afraid to come back to D.C. because they were like, if we go there, we're going to get charged.
Shock and awe. We had to unleash some shock and awe so that they'd be afraid to come back to D.C. And it worked. Obviously, it didn't work well enough for them not to turn D.C. into an armed camp. That continued for weeks, even weeks after the inauguration. Because after all, the three percenters, the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, all these groups that FBI agents have infiltrated, they're dangerous. They're dangerous. If they had to unleash some shock and awe on anyone and everyone involved, why are so many of the persons mentioned in these indictments, why have they gone unpunished? Who are these people? That's what Beatty's asking. Who are they? Person number two, he's mentioned in some of the documents. He was with Oath Keeper Thomas Caldwell. The whole time he's with Caldwell, Caldwell has been in prison since January the 6th. He's in prison waiting for his trial. Nobody knows what happened to person two. We know what happened to Caldwell, but we don't know what happened to person two. Person two stayed in the same hotel room for the protest. He was in the same hotel room with Caldwell. He texted about the plan. Person two was routinely provoking the Oath Keepers to storm the Capitol. In other words, he was an instigator, and he hasn't been arrested. He hasn't been indicted. He's not rotting away in a DC jail. Isn't that interesting? What is going on here? Are we being told the truth? Why hasn't the 14,000 hours of footage been released? This is all in the public system of records. And it takes someone like Darren Beatty at Revolver News to go after and uncover the truth, because you're certainly not going to get that in any of the high-profile journalists working at MSNBC or CNN. Listen to Chris Cuomo. This was he said this last night, talking about January the 6th, clip 5.
In all my years in this business, I have never seen anything as obvious as the infamy of January 6th be held up through a complete lens of political perspective. I've never seen anything like it. It's like literally 9/11 being seen as, you know, something materially different than what we all watched and lived.
We're literally looking at 9/11. A few months ago, and saying it was not anything like 9/11. Now, that's what he says is the big lie. The big lie is him pretending that that was 9/11. The big lie is him ignoring person 2, person 3, person 10, person 14, person 15, 16, 19, and 20. Where are these people? Where are the instigators? I mentioned person two. Person three helped to pay for the hotel rooms. I think in the ones that Thomas Caldwell stayed in, this is from the article, person three will have the goodies in case things go bad and we need to get heavy. That's a text message from person, I believe, from person two to person three. He's going to have the goodies in case things get heavy. I mean, these are people that were actually... they were actually planning to disrupt and to be violent and to vandalize things. So why isn't person two sitting in jail? Or person three, for that matter? Beatty's article says this. UCC 1, That's an informant, I believe, as well as two additional unindicted co-conspirators. Well, no, UCC is for unindicted co-conspirators, as well as two additional ones referred to only as Person 1 and Person 2 in the Proud Boys indictment were all in Proud Boys' upper-tier leadership and appear to have been the most prolific planners and incendiary advocates of insurrection in the run-up to and on the day of January 6th. And yet, not charged. We got to get Grandma in charge. Or we got to get Grandma in jail in case she committed trespassing. But Person 2, Person 3, they're still roaming the world, I guess. Just like all of those BLM and Antifa activists last summer. Put in jail maybe overnight. Let out the next day by Kamala Harris and her supporters and others. I mean, this is really dangerous. It's like Tucker said in that clip. If this were going on in Russia, what would these Western journalists be saying? It's happening right here in the United States. Here's another clip from Tucker last night, clip 3.
If you empower the government to violate civil liberties in pursuit of a foreign terror organization, and there are foreign terror organizations, it's just a matter of time before ambitious politicians use those same mechanisms to suppress political dissent. And that's what we're seeing now. We should have seen it earlier. Trevor Aronson wrote a book on this called The Terror Factory, and it analyzed every terror prosecution from 2001 to 2013. Aronson found that at least 50 defendants were on trial because of behavior that the FBI had not only encouraged but enabled. FBI agents were essentially the plotters in these crimes. They made the crimes crimes.
You see, when you weaponize the FBI or the DOJ, they infiltrate into these organizations that they despise, and they encourage criminal behavior, because if the criminal behavior happens, well, then you can prosecute them, you can persecute them, you can put them in jail. That's the whole point of Beatty's article. How much attention is it going to get? Well, thankfully, it's going to get a fair bit because of the Tucker segment. But here we are. You hear the propaganda media. Biden, Putin. Oh, Biden's got the upper hand. Putin this, Putin and Trump. But then Biden, so much better. Biden. It's all fake, isn't it? It's all a big lie. A lie on top of a lie. They needed COVID-19. They needed it so that they could get the mail-in ballots. Once they got the mail-in ballots, they could tell Joe Biden, look, just hang out in the basement. That way you don't say anything dumb or stupid. And we'll get this done. We'll just cheat. And he's there. You know, I could play the gaffes every day, I suppose. It's just kind of sad and pitiful in so many ways. But he's there as the front man. And the media helping to create some sort of towering image of greatness. Total frauds, all of them. Back to this Beatty bombshell. One more clip from Tucker last night, clip 9.
So FBI operatives were organizing the attack on the Capitol on January 6th, according to government documents. And those two are not alone. In all, Revolver News reported that there are, quote, upwards of 20 unindicted co-conspirators in the Oath Keeper indictments, all playing various roles in the conspiracy, who have not been charged for virtually the exact same activities, and in some cases, much, much more severe activities, as those named alongside them in the indictments.
Pretty amazing revelation. And yet, will it make a dent in that false narrative coming from the propaganda media? Here are these co-conspirators, these unidentified, these uncharged co-conspirators, guilty of worse crimes, and you see it in the government documents. And they're left to go free because they work for the FBI or the DOJ, some federal agency, while Thomas Caldwell is sitting in solitary confinement. Chris Wray, at a recent hearing, he was asked about all of the charges, trespassing, disorderly conduct, and so on. And then he was asked about insurrection charges. Here's how he responded. Clip four.
Has there been any insurrection charges?
I don't believe so. But again, there have been close to 500 cases.
And you know,
but I don't believe so.
500 cases and no charges of insurrection. You remember that Scott Pelley interview with Sherwin a couple months ago where Pelley was saying, look, shouldn't this be sedition? And Sherwin was saying, I think it rises to that level. Just a bunch of nonsense. We needed shock and awe to scare them. I mean, they're saying all of the silent parts out loud. And if people are listening, if there were more Darren Beatties in the world, you'd be connecting the dots thinking, this is the kind of thing that happens in Russia. And it's happening here in the United States? Is this actually happening? And yet, look at the propaganda media and the news cycle this morning, anointing Joe Biden as king over Russia. It's like they did with Barack Obama in 2009. They gave him the Nobel Peace Prize before he even did anything. That's the way it works. It's not about reporting the news or asking tough questions. It's about them driving narratives. That's all it's about. And then here comes this actual bombshell. The FBI helping to orchestrate the Jan 6 protest? Wow. Well, you talked about wanting a commission to get to the bottom of this. We're getting to the bottom of it, even without the Communist Commission, which, of course, would just continue to cover things up. They'd cover up the truth rather than expose it. I mentioned Ron Johnson. He's going through those 14,000 hours of footage from January the 6th. Here's the number. 309 people waved in by the Capitol Police. So you've got federal agents infiltrating into those groups, the Three Percenters, the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, inciting violence, all of these co-conspirators. You've got that. And then you've got law enforcement on Capitol Hill that's waving people. They're not holding the door, and then it kind of slowly but surely works its way open because the crowd's pushing on it. I mean, there was some of that in certain locations around Capitol Hill. But there was also a lot of law enforcement agents that said, here, come on in. The doors are wide open. Have at it. This is from Julie Kelly. She works over in American Greatness. One of the few that's actually pursuing the truth about January the 6th. She says, in a letter to acting U.S. Capitol Police Chief, Yogananda Pittman last week, Johnson, she's talking about Senator Johnson, zeroed in on the suspicious activity of several individuals around 2:30 p.m., right before more than 300 protesters entered the building through the doors on the Upper West Terrace. It says, moments before, according to Johnson's letter, an unauthorized person tried unsuccessfully to open a set of double doors. Five people returned to the double doors shortly thereafter and walked past a USCP officer, a Capitol Hill policeman. The security footage, which did not include audio, appeared to show the police officer gesturing toward the doors as these individuals walked past him. Once at the double doors, one of the five individuals pushed the left door's crash bar, and this time it opened. So they unlocked it and opened it for them. All five individuals exited the building at approximately 2:33. There's some truth. There's one senator, at least, that's exposing the truth. There's a guy working over at Revolver, News. There's Julie Kelly at American Greatness. But where is the New York Times? Where is the Washington Post? Where is CNN, NBC, CBS? Well, they're just slobbering over the fake president in Geneva. That's where they are. That's what they're doing. Carrying on with more false narratives. But how serious is this? Well, it's important enough to get the truth out, for sure. That's why this program is here in large part. But listen, coming back to the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, he gave those comments last Friday, basically threatening anyone that would scrutinize the ballots in Arizona, or anywhere for that matter, threatening states, state legislatures that pass laws lawfully, the right way, to uphold voter integrity. He's threatening them on Friday. And then yesterday, he's talking about the greatest threat facing the United States. This is clip one.
In the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocated for the superiority of the white race.
That's pretty, even the timing of that. You might have seen the story a couple of days ago, this black man that went on a shooting spree, I think, in three states. And he openly admitted, yeah, I was just looking for white people to shoot. And even as that's going on, the media, of course, could care less about that. They don't care about black-on-black crime. They don't care about black-on-white crime. And there he is, the top law enforcement official in the United States. The greatest threat. It's coming from those who advocate for the superiority of the white race. Well, in my mind, that means it's just going on all over the place. How much of what the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, the 3%ers, how much of what they did do on January 6th, how much of what they did do that was violent and that was criminal behavior on January the 6th, how much of it was encouraged and planned and incited by all of these unidentified co-conspirators? Those are some questions you would think a lot more people would be curious about. My father wrote in America Has No Helper, this is from April earlier this year, Satan has the power to conduct great evil and not only hide it, but then accuse others of committing it. That's what we're seeing. Hillary Clinton coming forward, accusing Donald Trump of this, this, and this. Still Trump, isn't it? Still racism. Says, we saw this with Obama's use of the deep state in general and the Mueller investigation specifically. It's an example of the depths of Satan that Jesus Christ warned his church about. You can prove the real purpose of the Mueller investigation, but Satan knows that if he makes it complicated enough to require deep study in order to understand it, most people won't do that. He can deceive them. It says the powerful way this man works to destroy the nation he leads is one of those depths. People have no chance without God. I mean, we've got to be, the point that he makes in passing there is that you've got to be willing to dig in and study it. And you have to give Darren Beatty some credit for digging in to those public documents, those government documents, and to ask questions. How come all these people aren't sitting in jail? You read through these indictments and see that they're guiltier of, as Tucker said, worse crimes than the ones that are in jail right now. Listen to this last clip from Tucker last night, clip 11.
In a moment of uncharacteristic honesty, a former FBI assistant director called Frank Figaluzzi explained the other day on MSNBC, the goal is to round up people who dissent against the regime and throw them into solitary, and that's including members of Congress. Watch this.
What have we learned from our experience with international terrorism? In order to address that problem, arresting low-level operatives is merely a speed bump, not a roadblock. In order to really tackle terrorism, and this time domestically, you've got to attack and dismantle the command and control element of a terrorist group. That may mean people sitting in Congress right now.
Round up sitting members, duly democratically elected members of Congress because they oppose the regime? Even Vladimir Putin's not doing that. And there's a former assistant director of the FBI calling for it on television and no one noticed.
Even Vladimir Putin isn't doing that. That's amazing what's happening in the United States. Communist infiltration. That former FBI guy, he's a communist. So many of these people supporting the fake Biden administration, they're just communists through and through. And they're using the DOJ and the FBI just like Vladimir Putin does in Russia, weaponizing those agencies to target and to persecute political enemies. And who are the enemies of the Biden administration? It's all of the Trump supporters. They're all racist. They're all white supremacists. And how do we know this? January 6th, they tried to overthrow the government. They were all armed. It was an armed insurrection. It was worse than 9/11. The big lie, and it's being exposed for those who have eyes to see. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to the show, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
On yesterday's show, toward the end, we talked about the importance of growth and how that we have to continue to grow if we're going to overcome our weaknesses, our sins, our faults, and so on. So you see it throughout the Bible. There's obviously the thou shalt nots throughout the Bible as well, but there's all kinds of positive admonitions too. It's not just 10 commands of what not to do. There's also 10 commands and more of do this. Do this. You see it early on in the book of Genesis, Genesis 2:17. It says, "But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof, you shall surely die." There's a clear thou shalt not, but the positive is God does it for our own benefit. He says, if you avoid this one, you won't die. You won't suffer. Notice verse 16. This is even before the verse we just read. It says, "And the Eternal commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat." You may freely eat of these trees that are there for your health and well-being, spiritually more than anything. But notice at the beginning, the Eternal God commanded the man, eat of the tree of life. Eat from the tree of life. It's doing what we're supposed to do, and this is what promotes growth. It's doing what we're supposed to do, or should I say, not doing what we're supposed to do that holds so many of us back. Maybe we've eliminated some of the distractions or some of the temptations that lead us down a rabbit hole or wherever. But are we actively working day in and day out to do the things that God commands that we do? Exodus 20, let's notice some of these verses about the Ten Commandments. Verse 1, it says, "And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Eternal your God, which have brought you out of the land of Egypt." It says, "out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods," it says, "before me." You shall have no other gods before me. Put me first. That's a positive admonition. Put God first above all else. It's not easy to do. It's easy to put other things in place of God or other people in place of God.
or other ideas or movements ahead of God. He says in verse 4, you shall not make you unto you any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down yourself to them nor serve them. For I, the eternal your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. So you put God first. That's very positive. And then God says, avoid these other temptations. Avoid this kind of idolatry. Verse 7, it says, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Eternal will not hold him guiltless that takes his name in vain. Here again, I guess the strict reading of it can be viewed in the negative, thou shalt not sense. But there's an understood positive in all of these commands, even the thou shalt nots. God wants us to be, he wants us to be guiltless. We're aiming for perfection. Matthew 5:48. Verse 8 here, it says, remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. I mean, that's a very positive command. My father just gave a Key of David program on that subject. Remember the Sabbath day. Keep it holy. Uphold that standard. Don't let down. Don't let it slip. Don't let it get watered down in any way. Verse 6 continues. This is part of the same fourth commandment. It says, 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. So God wants us to have He wants us to have six productive and fruitful, as I was saying yesterday, fruitful days. And then we come into the Sabbath, the day of rest, and it's rejuvenating. It's inspiring. It's uplifting. It's refreshing. The seventh day, it says there, is the Sabbath of the Eternal your God. It says, in it you shall not do any work, you nor your son, your daughter, and so on. So don't work on the Sabbath. Avoid working. You, your children, your family, everyone in the household participates in keeping the Sabbath holy. What about verse 12, the fifth commandment? It says, honor your father and your mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Eternal your God gives you. Anything negative about that? Children honoring their parents? You don't see much of it today. But when you do, it sure does bring blessings into that household. Children who grow up to respect and to honor and to submit to the parental authority, the father, the mother. The same command, by the way, is in Ephesians 6. So it's in the Old Testament and the New. Children, it says in Ephesians, obey your parents in the Eternal, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, and later on, that you might live long on the earth. That's a good thing, right? This is choose obedience and blessings, like it says there at the end of Deuteronomy 30. You make right choices. You obey God's laws. You uphold the standards. I was telling the students yesterday in a summer forum that it's just human nature being what it is. The tendency is to let down. The tendency is to just kind of let the standard lower over time. But we have to work to really prop it up. We have to work to really, to even raise it, to raise the standard. Because God's standard is perfection. That's what we're aiming for. And this promotes growth. As I said to you yesterday, verse 13, it says, you shall not kill, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor, you shall not covet your neighbor's house, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is your neighbor's. Thou shalt not. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do that. But there's an implied positive in all of this. In all of these commands,
don't bear false witness. In other words, tell the truth. I could go through all of them for you, but I think you get the point. Tell the truth. Don't steal. But like Paul says over in Ephesians 4, I think it is, give. Give. You don't just hoard everything you have and say, well, at least I'm not stealing from the other guy. The principle of God's law is outflowing. It's love. It's outflowing concern for others. So we're to be givers of God's way of life. If you think about what godly character is, Mr. Armstrong came up with some inspired definitions. He said, and this is just a paraphrase, character is coming to the knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. We have to know the truth. The truth is what will set us free, as Jesus said. So we come to the knowledge of what's right and wrong. And then added to that, we make our own free choice to do the right. We decide, okay, you know, like you go back to the Garden of Eden. God says, don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But I command you to eat from these trees freely. Eat from the tree of life, first and foremost. And so they were free moral agents. They got to choose. Were they going to obey God and do what was right in God's eyes? Or were they going to do what seemed right in their own eyes? You know what they did. They chose the latter. Satan got in there and started lying and telling them, look, why do you need to submit to God's authority? Just do your own thing. You're smart enough to make your own decisions. And so they went down that road. They rejected the knowledge and the Spirit of God and instead chose to decide for themselves what's right and wrong. So coming back to this definition of godly character, coming to the knowledge of what's right and wrong, as God defines it, I should add, then making your own free will decision or choice to do the right, and then added to that, exercising the will to actually do it instead of the wrong. So following through, becoming a doer of God's way of life. Now, let me just read to you one last verse in Hebrews chapter 2. I don't have time to go through several verses from chapter 1 and then what Paul says in verse 6, 7, and 8 about man's incredible human potential. But back up for a moment and just look at, you can read through the rest of chapter 2 in Hebrews if you like later, but look at what it says in verse 1. It says, therefore we ought to give the more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest at any time we should let them slip. We don't want to let them slip away. We've got to pay attention. We've got to give the earnest heed to the things that we've heard before. We've been taught these things. And then verse 3 says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great salvation, which at the first began to be spoken by the Eternal and was confirmed unto us by them that heard him? How are we going to escape if we neglect this great salvation? And of course, that's described in the rest of the chapter. We can miss out on this incredible human potential by just simply neglecting what it is God has given to us. That's maybe one of the great weaknesses so many in the church, certainly in the last era of God's church, have had. They stopped doing what they should have been doing. I'm sure they got caught up into various sins and following after temptations and so on. But be doers of what God says to do. Do the right. That's the very definition of righteousness. Be a doer of God's law, not a hearer only. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us. We appreciate you tuning in every day, every weekday, also now the weekend edition. You can send us feedback, td@thetrumpet.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.